Teach Me to Code, podcast episode 26. Hi everybody and welcome back to the Teach Me to Code podcast. This is your host, Charles Maxwood, and this week I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story. I realized a while ago that I hadn't really explained to the listener where I come from with a lot of the stuff that I talk about. And so I may have given a brief history of where I've worked and what I've done, but I don't think I've ever really explained why I think about software the way I do, so that's what I'm going to do. But before I get started, I want to remind everybody that this podcast is sponsored by New Relic. And New Relic is a terrific application monitoring tool that helps you identify any problems with your application, tracks errors, does all kinds of good stuff. And I highly recommend you go check them out. So go to newrelic.com and tell them that we sent you from Teach Me to Code. Now, before I really get going, I also want to remind you that you can leave feedback. You can do that by calling our hotline. It's 801-753-8279. Or you can email me, chuck@teachmetocode.com. And either of those, I'll be happy to use any comments that you give me on the podcast, read the emails. And, you know, even if it's just a, hey, thanks for everything you do, or if it's a, you know, I wish you'd do this different or this better, I really appreciate that. I am trying to get more people on from the Agile community as well as from other programming communities, so keep an ear out for that. And next week I'm actually going to have an interview that I did with Jeffrey Grossenbach. Jeffrey is the guy behind PeakCode.com. You may have watched some of their videos. He's also done a whole bunch of other things. He'll be speaking at a conference in Vienna in September called SchnitzelConf. And, you know, does a lot of cool stuff. He does the Ruby on Rails podcast, so keep an ear out for that. All right, so now into my story. Well, my story with engineering, software, you know, stuff like that, it really started quite a long time ago. I've always been kind of a geek. I don't want to say that I was, you know, different or introverted or, you know, any of the stereotypes that go with it, but I've always been interested in technology. When I was probably like 10 or 11, one of my neighbors helped me with a science fair project where basically what it was is, if you can imagine a crank on one side, and on the other side of the crank is a magnet on the, and we just took a block, we drilled a hole through the top, and then we put a hanger through it. And so if you can imagine, you kind of have a crank on both sides, but the crank on one side, and then on the other side we taped a magnet to it. And every time the magnet would go past, we had a little, I think it was a little transformer was all, and we hooked some LEDs up to it. And what would happen is, as the magnet went past it, it would force a current to go through the wires and it would light up the LEDs. LEDs, well, we're all technical people, but if you don't know, an LED is kind of like a small light bulb, for lack of a better description. Anyway, so that got my curiosity piqued. And in junior high, I started to realize that a lot of this had to do with mathematics. And so I got really interested in mathematics, and I bought myself a TI-85 calculator. And all my friends were out buying, you know, the Game Boy gaming system or, you know, whatever CDs, and I bought myself a really nice calculator. And it had some functionality where you could program it. And so that's kind of where I got started. You know, I started writing, you know, just little programs that would help me with my homework. You know, nothing major, nothing fancy. But I kind of thought of programming as sort of a toy, and I never really took it seriously. We also did some Pascal. I also remember doing some kind of turtle drawing program when I was in elementary school. And all of that was just really interesting to me. And then when I got into high school, I got into electronics. And I took electronics for 3 years in high school. And toward the end, we were actually building robotics and things like that. And we were instrumenting and programming an 8086 with little bytecodes, you know. So you'd put in the hex numbers, and the hex numbers represented operations. And so the operations would do their magic, and then you would get the readout on the pins off of the chip, and it would light up diodes that would, you know, give you a digital display, or you would just have a series of eight LEDs, you know, little lights again, that would tell you what was going on. So, you know, all of this stuff kind of happened and kind of formed me into being very, very interested in technology. And at that point, I thought that what I really wanted to do was electronics. So, when I went to college, when I went to Brigham Young University, the first thing I did was I went in and I said, okay, what do I have to do to be an electrical engineering major? And so, you know, they gave me the information I needed, and I took all the prerequisites and got into the program. And I got probably a year and a half into the program, and I started taking the computer engineering classes, which focus more on the computer hardware as opposed to the as opposed to electronics themselves. So basically from there I really got into programming. A lot of it's programming. I mean, we were either on the CAD programs where we were building circuits, or we were programming boards to simulate computer functions. And, you know, it was all really, really interesting to me, and I really got interested in C. I had to take some classes in Java and C++, but ultimately it was C that really got my attention. At the same time, I was working in the IT department as a systems administrator. And so, you know, I was helping a lot of the programmers at the university and in other areas, you know, figure their stuff out and get things set up on the servers. And, you know, so all of these different aspects of technology were all really fascinating to me. And, you know, I was good at programming, but it still kind of felt like a toy. And that was due primarily to the fact that in my programming classes, you would write a little piece of code that, you know, did something that really didn't mean anything, and then your TA would pass it off and you'd throw it away. You know, I mean, some of the classes, like the operating systems class, I mean, a lot of that was actually aimed at helping you understand how you had to think about low-level design in an operating system, and so that was important. And that was useful stuff to know, but, you know, in some of the algorithms and graphics and classes and stuff, you know, you just, you know, it was stuff that you were just throwing out, and it was stuff that I never thought I'd ever use. So, anyway, so I got into programming, and I got into systems administration, and, you know, finally what happened was I was dinking around with PHP on the side, building a website that I thought would be interesting, and I was doing the systems administrator work. And then somebody told me that I ought to go and start looking for a job. I mean, I was still like a year out from graduating, or 6 months out at least, but they were saying, you know, if you start looking now, then you can make the relationships that will get you the job later. So I started applying around, and a startup company in American Fork, Utah, actually had me come in for an interview and wanted to hire me. And they were willing to work around my school schedule until I graduated and then have me come on full time. So I went and I talked to them, and it seemed like an interesting place to be, and it seemed like a place where I could kind of start my career. So I said, sure, why not? Even though it wasn't really in my field, they wanted me in their tech support department. Tech support for their customers, not for their employees. Though we did do that too. In a company of 10 people, you do both. Anyway, so I decided to take the job. And so I took the job at what was then Berkeley Data Systems and helped support their new product called Mosey. And, you know, the systems administration stuff really came in handy because, you know, I knew the ins and outs of Windows, and that's what the product was running on. And, you know, so, you know, it was great. You know, I got to do a lot of the stuff that I like to do. I got to help people, which I didn't really know I was so interested in at the time. But, you know, I really got to see how technology is really used by real people. And I got to deal with programmers on a regular basis who were actually building stuff that wasn't toys. So what then happened that December, right after I graduated, Mosey got featured in the Wall Street Journal by Walt Mossberg. And for those of you who don't know who he is one of the big consumer technologist columnists that are out there. And, you know, he has a video podcast now and things like that. But anyway, Mosey got featured. And I think by then the company had grown to maybe 15 people. Anyway, it became apparent pretty quickly that the tech support methods that we were using, namely Thunderbird on an email account, weren't going to cut it for the now hundreds and thousands of emails that were coming in when there were only two of us to handle them. And there were problems with overlap. You know, he'd pick up the other guy would pick up an email, and then I'd pick up the same email, and then he'd send a response, and then I'd find out that he had sent the response, so I'd scrap mine. And there were just all these inefficiencies in the system. And at the same time, he had been playing with and programming in Ruby on Rails. So what he did is he went ahead and he started building an interface that we could use to pull the emails out of the inbox using IMAP protocol. And, you know, he just used T-mail because that was what we had in 2006. And, you know, so we just had a simple little interface. And so what would happen is it would pull up an email and it would mark it in the database as, you know, having been picked up. And then when you sent it, it would, you know, it would send the reply. And pretty soon we had worked things in so that we had canned responses for common problems. It appended our signatures automatically. I mean, just all kinds of stuff that really made our jobs a whole lot easier. And at the same time, they were playing with the phone support. So, you know, we were looking into ways to handle that. And at the same time, the company really wasn't in a position to spring for an expensive tech support system. Though, looking back, I really think they should have. I think it would have solved a lot of our problems right off the bat. But I can't complain, because that's what really got me exposed to programming things that weren't toys. And really understanding how technology can make a difference for people. So we built the system, we fleshed it out, we added ticket numbers to the system, we started sending the ticket numbers back in the subject. You know, it did all kinds of stuff. You know, it wasn't the most stable, but we were both pretty amateur at programming a system like that. So, you know, we just did what we could. You know, got a fledgling knowledge base in there. Eventually, we did build the phone system into it. And the nice thing about Asterisk is that it's based on MySQL. And so Active Record ties into that very nicely. And without too much trouble, we soon had full statistics on our effort. At the same time, the other guy that had worked on this system with me moved over to be the full-time tech support for the sales department, and I wound up as director of the technical support department with about 10 to 15 people underneath me. And I was in that position for probably, I don't know, probably a year and a half. And during that time, you know, the team grew and grew and grew because our workload was growing and growing and growing. And at the same time, the company was then acquired by EMC Corporation in the summer of 2007, I think. And I think it was official and complete, you know, sometime in the beginning of 2008. So, anyway, during that summer, things kind of went a little haywire. A lot of people, because of the acquisition, were kind of jockeying for position. And, you know, things just weren't going the way I wanted. The other problem I had was that as the team grew, you know, I was soon spending 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week, 60 hours a week. And, you know, after a certain amount of time, you just can't sustain that pace. And so I kind of got burned out on management. I got tired of, you know, some of the infighting that was going on. I got tired of, you know, certain people treating other people poorly, certain people trying to make their move up, move down in the company. And I'm not saying that everybody was doing this, but there were a few people doing it, a few people that were close to me in the company doing it, and I just decided that it wasn't worth it. The other thing that happened was I was spending more and more time supporting the systems that made the technical support department run, and I was really getting interested in programming as a career rather than just as a hobby that made things work in my particular department. So eventually I went to my boss and I said, "Boss, I want to be a programmer." And he looked at me and, you know, he said, "Well, that's not up to me. It's up to the director of engineering." And knowing the way that they hired then, I don't know if they still have this process in place now, but the way that they did it back then was that you would come in, I don't know what their initial screening process was, but if they liked you, they would have you come in, they would put you in front of a whiteboard, and they would effectively drill you for a couple of hours and have you program on the whiteboard. I mean, it was just, it was a brutal process. And, you know, so he kind of looked at me like, they're never going to let you on that team, because I didn't have the experience that apparently they would want. So I said, "Well, why can't I go do QA?" Because we had a QA specialist come in, get things started. They'd hired another guy to help her out, and he had kind of taken over when she left. In fact, I think I've mentioned her on this podcast as Kay Johansson, who helped form the Agile Roots Conference. So I went over and I started working in QA. And boy, if you want some perspective on software, technical support will give you some, because you have people calling in about both usability issues and bugs. But when you're in QA and you're getting the raw product before it goes out, you get this perspective not only where bugs typically occur, but just what the processes are that make software great and what processes don't. And if there is no process, it's really hard to maintain a certain level of quality on your product. And so during that time, we actually held up the release on the Windows client of the Mozy product for about 9 months. I mean, really, we kept finding bugs in the software. And I'm pretty sure they've ironed it all out. Their process is much better now, and the software is way more reliable. But, you know, it was still kind of a new company, and so that's where we were. And, finally, my coworker, and there's no risk of him getting fired because he's no longer with them either. He looked at me and he said, "A, you're a natural at QA." And I was like, "Well, that's great, but I want to be a developer." And he also said, "You should be getting paid a whole lot more to do this." He basically told me that he was sure that I was making less than he was, and that they should be paying me more than he was getting paid. I felt like he probably should have been paid more than he was getting paid too, because I could guess at what he was making. But anyway, that's beside the point. So he told me to go ahead and get another offer or two, and then bring it back to the company and say, "Hey, look, I want to stay here. I like my job," which were both true, "but I got this offer, and they want... you know, they're going to pay me this much." He said, "I can almost guarantee you that they'll keep you, you know, and that they'll pay you that." So I went out and I did a bunch of interviews. And the funny thing was that I put Ruby on Rails on my resume, and I had a recruiter call me up for a company called SolutionStream, also an American fork. And, he was saying they're looking for a programmer, and they're a great company to work for, and, you know, on and on and on. And so it sounded good, and it was a programming position. So I told him I was interested, and, you know, I figured that I might get a little better offer, and Mozy would turn around and accept it, and everything would be happy. Well, and then there was another company in Salt Lake City, and I don't remember what they're called, but they had some kind of point-of-sale product that they had that they wanted me to work QA on. So I got an offer from both SolutionStream, who I really wasn't qualified to work for, mainly because they only hire senior developers, just like Mozy did. The reason I got the job was that my IT background appealed to them. And so they thought I could help out there when I wasn't programming. So anyway, so I got the two offers and I took them back to Mozy. And I said, "Hey guys, I got these offers. I really want to stay here. What can you do for me? And, you know, so my boss went up the food chain and, you know, they came back and said, well, we're on a salary freeze during this acquisition. And I had seen them pull stuff like this with other people, using the acquisition as a reason not to give them raises and things like that. And it turned out that that was the way things actually went down. Later on, they had promised a whole bunch of people raises after I left, and they didn't get them. So they came back and they said, well, the hiring freeze should be over in April or in August, and you should be up for a raise in May because we're going to give everybody raises in May. So if you stick around, then we promise you we'll give you half of the difference between the two salaries in May, and then we'll talk to you again in August. And I looked at him and I said, you realize I want to be a developer, and they're going to let me be a developer for this much more money. And they kind of, you know, raised their eyebrows like, are you really going to leave? And I did. I left. So I went to SolutionStream, and I wound up working with just this incredible guy that I'm hoping to get on the podcast sometime. But he's really busy, and I'm really busy, and so that makes it kind of hard. But anyway, he was just an incredible, incredible mentor. And, you know, we wound up working on the same project full time. So I would either work from SolutionStream's office, or I would work in his basement, or I would work up at the client's office, you know. But that didn't happen very often because they were in downtown Salt Lake, and I live in Utah County, and he lives in southern Salt Lake County. So it was a half-hour drive at best for either of us. So anyway, he taught me a lot about programming and about Ruby and Rails. And anyway, things worked out really well. And I worked with him on that project, and then I worked with him on another project for another company. After about a year with SolutionStream, they ran out of Rails work. The one company went bust. And the other company fell on some hard times. And I'm not going to go into what their problems were, but basically they couldn't afford to continue to retain a developer for hire. So they told my boss, you know, we completed the 6-month stint. We can't afford to pay for them anymore. So, you know, we're real sorry. So they scrambled around, tried to find some more Rails work, and ultimately couldn't, and so I wound up getting laid off. You know, and I loved working for them, and I loved the clients that they found, so I probably would have stayed there forever till I retire or whatever. But it wasn't to be, and at the same time, I had also found the Utah Ruby Users Group, so I started attending that, and I was picking up a ton of things from them. And I just want to recommend to anybody who is near a users group to find it and start going. And if you're not near a users group, start one, because they're totally worth it. Anyway, so what happened next was I went on monster.com and I just started sending my resume to anybody and everybody who was looking for a Ruby on Rails developer. I didn't know what else to do. I'd gotten on to Odesk and was looking at some freelance jobs there, but they weren't paying a lot. And I don't know if that's necessarily the right place to look or if I just wasn't looking in the right part of Odesk. But, you know, they were paying $10 to $12 an hour for a Rails developer, and I was making more than that in my part-time job at BYU. So, anyway, it worked out that there was a company that had a dire need located in Provo, Utah. And they were a lead generation company. I guess they still are. They're still there. They're a lead generation company. They collect leads for educational institutions, colleges and universities. And what they do is they take the leads and they kind of funnel the people through forms that help them put in what they're interested in doing, what schools they're interested in attending, and then what they do is they turn around and they sell the leads to the schools. And our project was to build a huge lead management system, you know, that would manage all those leads, keep track of who they'd been sold to, you know, help the schools keep track of the lead quality and stuff like that. And it was really a tool not just for the company to keep track of the leads, but to help the schools actually keep track of their marketing plans. And it all looked really good, but I was having some problems with the situation there. At SolutionStream, it was very structured, which is really good. It's good for the software. It's good for a lot of things. SolutionStream more just adopts the client's the client's outlook on software. So if the client wants tests, then you get tests, and if the client doesn't want tests, they don't get tests. That kind of thing. But you know, they're just paying per hour for your time, so you know, it's really up to them. Well, at this company, there really wasn't a whole lot of process. The design was basically, at least on my project, it was the CEO basically saying, well, this is what I want. And he would give it to us, but he wouldn't give us enough detail to actually build it. Sometimes we would get wireframes, which is nice, but you know, you can't give a wireframe and not give the behavior that certain parts of the wireframe are supposed to have and things like that. And so we would wind up spending hours talking to him to figure out what everything was supposed to do. The other problem was that I just didn't feel like... I felt like I was really good friends with the guys on my team, and I wound up being the team lead. But the problem was that I felt like I was constantly having to help mentor them through becoming better developers. And I didn't feel like I had a whole lot of opportunities to grow. I don't mind helping other developers, obviously. If you've gone to teachmetocode.com, you know this. My problem was that I didn't feel like I had a lot of opportunities to grow, and I wasn't given the time to better myself. And there wasn't anyone there to help me learn the stuff that I needed to learn. And so anyway, I was really, to be honest, bored. And the other problem is I like to feel like I have kind of a higher purpose in my coding. I want to feel like it's making a difference, you know. And with SolutionStream, you know, the projects that I was working on, I felt like were things that people could use to make their lives easier. One was an online phone book, social networking kind of thing, which could have really been interesting. And there were just so many novel twists and turns, and I was learning the entire time. The other project was kind of a downloads.com sort of thing. And, you know, a lot of their focus was on how they could profit from it, but that's business. But ultimately, it was a really cool project to work on, and I was working with a really senior guy who was learning Rails, and he was teaching me how to code. And so, you know, there was a lot of that there, but with the project at PMA Media Group, I just really wasn't getting into it. And lead generation, I felt like, was we collect these people's data and we sell them to whoever will pay more for them, which wasn't always the case. But you know how it gets when you're in a job that you just want to be out of. You just kind of get that view of the worst case scenario, and so that's where I was. And so I started looking around for another job. The other problem that I had was that there were a couple of times where my boss, before the CEO, came in and basically said, somebody's losing their job today. And I can't work for a company that does that. And it at the time had seemed that the CEO and COO were both in on and okay with this approach. As it turns out, when I left, the CEO sat me down and said, no, that's not the way we do things here. And when he did that, he was totally out of line. But ultimately, that led me not only to want to leave, but it also led me to not let on that there was a problem at work. So they got about the shortest notice you can get. Because when I got an offer at Public Engines, they wanted me the next Monday, and so I gave them my notice on Friday. And anyway, so things worked out there. I did learn a lot about the processes that I like to work under, and I've also learned about the type of developer that I like to work with. And so at Public Engines, I feel like I get the best of all these worlds. And this is not to say that I get along with everybody I work with, because I don't. I get along with most of the people I work with, and the ones that I don't, I can live with. So the real thing is that I work with some really talented programmers. And I work with people who are new to Rails, but not new to programming. I'm working with people who are newer to programming than I am and aren't working in Rails. You know, I mean, I just get a good mix, but I really get to be challenged every day. And I get to see the processes that we go through to design the products and the systems and all of these different things. And we're constantly looking for new ways to make things better. And so, you know, that's ultimately the ultimate job for me. The only thing that would be better, honestly, would be to work from home. Which, you know, it's not something that I think is realistic for a company like them. Crimereports.com, just, you know, I think there's a high level of collaboration that needs to happen there. And you can do that from home, but it's harder. The other thing is I really like interacting with people on the level that I get to interact with on the podcast and screencasts. So ultimately, I mean, I think my ideal job looks a whole lot like Jeffrey Grossenbach, or, you know, some of these other guys that, you know, or two or three guys, maybe the people who put together the Scout app or something, you know, where they do some consulting, and then they, you know, they have this app on the side that's generating some money. But, you know, really just being able to reach out, put stuff together like this, and you know, provide it to you. This isn't an appeal for some kind of support or money or anything else. If there is something that I can do or put together that you would like to see, some app that you would like to see built or something like that, I would love to do that. I'm also working on a Teach Me to Code Academy, and that will be a paid subscription-based service, but I'm also going to be putting out paid screencasts and things like that. I don't intend to put out a lot of paid screencasts that I can do as free screencasts. So the paid screencasts will be a little bit longer and maybe a little bit more in depth. But, you know, ultimately the idea is that if I can get to the point where I can support myself, at least for the most part, based on the content that I'm putting out, then, I can put out more of it and better. And that's really what I want to do. I want to be able to put out more podcasts. I've kind of been all over the place with this one, and I'm thinking that, you know, well, maybe I ought to put together one on Agile, one on Ruby, and, you know, maybe a couple of others on different areas of expertise or interests that I have, you know, including maybe Linux administration or things like that. I haven't decided yet, and I would really like the input. So if you could send me an email, chuck@teachmetocode.com, or you can go on the website and you can comment on this podcast. This is episode number 26. Or, you know, if neither of those work for you, or if you want to call, you can call me 801-753-8279. Or if you want to call my cell, I'll put that one out there. It's 801-367-6164. And, you know, I'd be happy to hear from you, hear what you have to say, and really just get some solid opinion or advice on where you think this should go. Because ultimately, I want to put stuff out that will help you. And, you know, I feel like I've really grown into the developer role and really come to realize that what makes me tick and what gets me excited is just the idea of being able to go out and help people with technology. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up, but you know, I really appreciate everybody who listens to this. I appreciate everybody who's left feedback on iTunes or left comments on the website, and I'm constantly working to make that better. So, you know, keep sending me your suggestions, keep going to the user voice forum and, you know, making requests. and we'll do the best we can to get those out there. And that's it. I'm just going to wrap this up. Thanks for